plus years of non-commercial community powered radio. It is currently 46 degrees in the Twins, partly cloudy skies. Coming up right away is Robert Pilot with the best of Native Roots Radio. I am awake.
Spring is here.
How can you tell?
The snow is gone.
We didn't get any snow.
It's warming up.
It never really got cold.
Things are looking green.
It's been spring since October.
And the KFAI Spring Member Drive is coming.
Oh yeah, that's always a sure sign.
So get ready to go to KFAI.org to support non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Hey, we didn't have to shovel.
What's up?
This is the Minnesota Dose on KFAI. The CDC...
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
KFAI is proud to present Hattis Noit at the Cedar Cultural Center on Sunday, April 7th. The Cedar is honored to host the U.S. debut of Hattis Noit, a Japanese vocal performer whose impressive range is inspired by everything from Japanese classical music and operatic styles of gagaku to Bulgarian and Gregorian chanting, to avant-garde and pop music. Opening the show is local duo Chama Devora. Tickets for Hattis Noit can be found at the Cedar Cultural Center website. Visit thecedar.org for more details.
Well, we're having a little technical difficulties, so I'm just going to go ahead and play a little bit of music for you while I get this sorted out. And hopefully we'll be getting Robert Pilot up with Native Roots Radio in just a second here or so. So here we go with a little more music for you.
Thank you.
se vuelve siempre al amor. Vuelvo a vos con mi deseo, con mi temor. Llevo el sol como un destino del corazón. Soy del sur como los aires del bandoneón.
vida mejor para nuestro pueblo.
Thank you. viene el lento divagar. Una música brutal encendió nuestra pasión.
Espectacular, un partido impresionante. Toma la pelota Nini Flores de Corrientes, un verdadero duende, un mago del bandoneón. Hábil y musical, siempre inspirado. Lo va dejando para el ruso Beitelman. Gustavo Beitelman, auténtico gaucho judío de Venado Tuerlo. Un sabio, quizás el músico argentino más importante residente en Europa. Va dejando la pelota para Lynn Cruz, la violinista danesa, tanguera, dinamita en los dedos y en el alma. Bellísima, va tocando la pelota por el costado para Christoph Müller. Christoph Müller se acerca al área. La va dejando para Filippo El Solal. Él toca para Eduardo Mascaró, está frente al arquero, va a tirar Diogo.
We now join Native Roots Radio presents I Am Awake, the best of Already in Progress.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by All My Relations Arts and their current gallery exhibit, Okeezy, in partnership with the American Swedish Institute, now until April 13th, off of Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. And right now, we're back with Diane Fraher, who is the writer, director, and producer of the new movie, The Heart Stays, which follows two young Native Americans from Osage Nation as they, you know, come of age and go explore the real world off of reservations. So, Diane, thank you so much for being here again with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're really excited. This movie will debut on demand on March 26th, which is today, 2024. Could you tell our listeners how they can get this on demand?
I believe it's going to be on multiple platforms. Is it on? I actually haven't gotten the list. It's I'm supposed to get it here coming through shortly, but
yeah.
Do they provide you with a list?
Yes, I think okay. So. I think we do. A digital availability on March 26th, Apple TV, Prime Video, Vudu, Google Play, DirecTV, and more.
Right. And Dish TV too, right?
I think. Yes.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Right. So I've been involved more with the showing in the theatrical release. So I'm just now, you have to bear with me here a little bit. This is all happening. It comes together quickly.
So. I know it's you wonder if it's going to happen, and then all of a sudden it's all happening at once.
Yes. So
well, that's totally exciting, and everybody has those platforms, and I know to be able to. And again, I want to applaud, and we kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, that Native Americans telling their own story is so important. There's so many nuances, and what I love too, when I do see a Native story that's done by a Native story, it's also for the masses, but it also has those fun little quirky things that only Natives get. So I'm looking forward to looking for those little pieces too.
They're there.
Yeah, that's great. And
Diane. I gotta say too, I know we're on the topic of this new movie, The Heart Stays. How long have you been in the business of directing and doing film work, and kind of what influenced you to do this type of work?
Well, my first film was The Reawakening, and we sort of began pioneering this model of Native people in artistic leadership positions, working with non-Native professionals in support of us, and also going deeply within community, because I work together with the folks at Onondaga Nation. I'm here in the East, and had been friends and, you know, had alliances, worked with the folks from the Haudenosaunee people, otherwise their Koi Confederacy, and those nations. And so and had worked with the folks at Onondaga Nation, and where we worked out a lot of this, some of these ideas, and then I just kept going. But the key thing was always for me that we have to get Native people in positions of artistic leadership so that we are defining who we are. Otherwise, we're just being talked about, and like we said in the earlier segment, it could be anything. I mean, it's not good storytelling to do that, in my opinion. So, and it's also not really Native if we're not. So, right. The dream of for me, in terms of we wanted to pioneer a new artistic approach, like we discussed earlier, in going deeper into the specificity of the storytelling. And which incidentally helps the audience, even non-Natives, be able to relate to it more when they're watching it. The more specific you are, the more wider it becomes. But also a production model, which had to take place too. So, and that meant Native people, traditionally people would come in and say, well, we're going to tell this story. And they'd have some folks as their advisors. And then they, in many cases, didn't really listen. That was the pattern. And what we were trying to do is we flipped that over and had Native people as much as possible in positions of artistic leadership, and then worked with seasoned, talented non-Native professionals, and we listened to them, right? And it became like a peer group hierarchy, not a top-down hierarchy, which is the peer group hierarchy is much more Native. So that opened up more possibilities and for bringing in more Native people. So
can you talk a little bit about the locations of the movie, where it was shot? I know some of it was shot in Osage.
It was shot, again, on Osage Nation, deep within community, had a tremendous amount of support on many levels. Osage Nation Foundation, I received two grants over a period of time, production that I applied to the production of it. We had, again, Native people in positions of artistic leadership. And then the second half of the story was shot in New York, and mm-hmm. where we worked Native people from the urban Native community there became much more involved. Most of the actors that we worked with on Osage Nation their parts had been shot, so there were only the two lead actress and the principal supporting role were with us in New York. But then we gave opportunities to and brought in a lot the Native people more from the urban Native community that I'd worked with as artists for years, mm-hmm. And then galvanized again a tremendous amount of support from people in the New York area, non-Native people joining us. I mean, it's and that was basically how we got it done.
Well, and I'm sure I saw a picture I think they were in Grand Central Station, and mm-hmm. kind of an overwhelming look, which I get every time I'm in New York.
Yes.
I want to ask you about your directing style. Do you stay on top of the script? Are you able to let the talent improvise, or how many takes? I mean, there's so many different variables of directing a movie. What would you say your style is?
Because we're working, in community, then that opens up the possibility. It deepens the trust between myself and the actors. So mm-hmm. it does open the possibility for some improvisation, mm-hmm. which that happened both on Osage Nation and then happened here in New York when we did that part of it. And I think any time that you deepen the collaborative process in a film, that's really continues to lift the whole thing up. And I had elders working with me it's interesting. Both of them, over more than one take, improvised their lines. But yet we were so also connected through the story, mm-hmm. that what they were improvising was just as good, I felt, that we had written. And so I didn't want to risk monkeying with the performance and the continuity of the whole thing. So I said, you know what, we're just going to get a couple of takes and we'll use the one that we feel is best. But it was fantastic, really, in a way, to see that happen. So
yeah. So a combination of organic and using the script as kind of a path to the scene.
Yes, right. And also because it was Native people leading, we were all, we were all, we all understood the story on more than one level. Mm-hmm. So people were, And I feel like from the very beginning that the actors knew that they realized that we this was a unique opportunity, okay, for mm-hmm. Native actor, the roles, because there was so much more character development, you know, for them to sink their teeth into, so to speak. And I just want to bring up something, because this is really important, too. We have an all-Native soundtrack.
Wow.
I'm particularly proud of that. The composer's Native, and Jared Tate, singer-songwriter Brooke Simpson is involved in this. She's from Halawasapone, Tuscarora community in North Carolina. And then we have some veteran people, Keith Sekola, and mm-hmm. then we have and Jimmy Wolf, the blues artist, Mohawk blues artist from upstate New York, and then Rex Lyons and the Ripcords from Onondaga Nation. So all of these seasoned professionals and recognized and respected by their peers in the musical and Native musical community. So that added just a whole nother layer of excitement to the process.
Oh, absolutely. And how music can help tell the story too, or accentuate the story. That's mm-hmm. naming mm-hmm. those artists is really exciting, because sometimes me as just a movie goer, how important the music plays sometimes is beyond me. But also there's other movies where it's like, wow, you know, the music really helped tell the story.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, so that's we got a minute left. Hailing Diane, let's talk about where people can see this movie, how they can see the movie, and we are so excited to have you on. And we're really excited that Natives are telling their own story, and that's where we're at. You know, we have to do that, and we appreciate all the work that must have been involved in the pre-production and the production and the final story, Diane. So give us, Haley, where people can see it name of the movie again.
Yeah, so you can stream Diane Fraher's new film, The Heart Stays, now March 26th on Apple TV, Prime Video, Vudu, Google Play, DirecTV, and more.
And I always say that we hope that people will let the story into their heart.
Wow, perfect way to end it. A big peenie, thank you so much, Diane, and I'll see you in the big city sometime.
Yes, please. Okay, it's so wonderful to meet you folks and work with you.
Right on. We'll talk to you soon. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we are here with filmmaker Leah Hale, and we are talking about the Electric Indian, the documentary about our late great friend, Henry Boucher, and we're really excited to have Leah on. Welcome, Leah.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you, too. And I finally have been able to see the documentary, and I am just so excited. What great work, what great music you have in the background. And I think one of the things that I was really happy and surprised with was all the great footage that you had of Henry when he was playing.
Yeah, it was really awesome footage. And to me, I feel like that's probably one of the difficult things to do when it comes putting a documentary together is researching and finding a lot of this, you know, old footage, plain footage. But this was really one of the most easiest documentaries I produced because Henry did a lot of that groundwork. You know, over his career, he definitely held on to a lot of the footage that was even, you know, people filmed of him or even archival news footage. So when we started the process, he gave me this big, huge box and he was just like, this is all the footage of myself that I collected over the years. So it was really just nice to have that foundation to start off from. And definitely we had to do a lot of the digitizing of it because it was on, you know, VHS tapes and all kinds of old mediums back in the day. But yeah, it was really cool just to have access to all of that footage right away.
Well, his story is a sad one, but it's also a great one and one that needed to be told. And I'm really, really happy about, one, the job that you did, but also that you did this on Henry, who had a real brief career in the NHL because of what happened to him. His double vision lasted the rest of his life. But also, it was a great celebration of how great of a hockey player he was when he was young, and it was even pointed out in this documentary that he may have been the greatest high school hockey player in the state's history.
Yes, I totally heard that from many people along the way of making this film. It's just all the stories I heard from strangers, you know, that learned that I was making a documentary, and it was just awesome to hear all of these different stories, especially of people that are older now, but can remember him playing when they were children. And it was just awesome to hear their stories and see them light up because he was definitely somebody that made an impact on the hockey community and the Native community at large. And it was just really an honor for me to bring his story to light once again, because I think there's so much lessons in it and so much empowerment from his story alone. And I think I really, you know, wanted to bring his vision, his story, his resiliency to a whole new generation of young people. So I'm really hoping that this film will touch young athletes, especially because there's so much lessons that we can learn from his journey.
Yeah, so many, and not really being brought up in the community and coming back to the community and the community, the creator speaking to him in many ways to come back to the community and then joining forces with the parent committee up there, which I personally know is a huge deal because I was part of the parent committee in St. Paul for many years for schools. And really, this was meant to be. His grandson was in the tournament. The timing, also, I know during the tournament that he put his a headband on to give a shout out to his grandfather, Henry.
Yeah, I heard about that. I believe it was the prior year before his first time going to the, this is Henry Boucher's grandson, Gabby Boucher. And it was just awesome seeing his journey in his last year of his senior year playing hockey. And his mother shared with me that the year before was his first time getting to the state tournament. And he wore a headband to honor and recognize his grandfather's legacy. And that would have been perfect if it was the one tournament that we filmed, but it was just awesome to hear those stories and to see the pictures of it when he did that.
Right. And also the story that I never knew or heard of, the pushback that he had in wearing that headband. I never knew that story.
Yeah, that was one of my most favorite parts of the film is, you know, just those subtle racism things that we have to go through as Native people. And, just how eloquently Henry talked about those moments in his life. And even though they weren't, you know, like really extreme, you know, racism happening to him, but they're more subtle. And mm-hmm. that's probably one of the things I'm most connected with. And I think a lot of us Native people can connect with is just that idea of those challenges and having to face those head on sometimes, even from our own, you know, colleagues, whatever field we're in. Sometimes when we're in spaces where it's non-Indigenous and we, you know, do our best to try and bring our culture into what we're doing, then sometimes we kind of get that pushback or those misunderstandings. And that's what I just loved about him. And in a way, it just kind of rolled off his back. And also he kind of used it, you know, as a way to empower himself, and instead of the opposite, which could happen too, to some of us, where sometimes people who don't believe in, you know, our vision or believe in the things that we do that will help us become stronger. Sometimes those things affect us and impact us negatively. But I just thought Henry's, you know, example of going through some of those difficulties, you know, being the only Native, probably in the NHL at that time on his team, the only Native, and just kind of having to, you know, navigate those indifferences, I just thought was awesome, an awesome example for us to see.
Yeah, and he, you know, I met Henry years ago with the fight of the Washington team mascot, and I know he was really involved with that here in the Twin Cities, and to open doors for people in a good way, his name was used in a good way, and because he is nationally known by everyone, and for many reasons, and we had a signing at our store with him, and he was also signed many books for us, and he's just gracious person. And I, you know, I guess for me, and I'm sure you spent a lot of time with him too, it was kind of sad because he's not here to enjoy this, and but he is.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But at the same time, you know, like I mentioned earlier, how this was probably one of the easiest films that I had to produce because he put so much of his heart into it and passion into it long before I came along. You know, it was nice when I met him and we made the agreement to produce the film. And, you know, he had already these nice written story treatments already written out. And he was just so, you know, sure about what he wanted it to be in the film. And he was so honest too. That was mm-hmm. something that was really nice, that he wanted to, you know, highlight some of his flaws and highlight just some of the personal difficulties that he was dealing with, especially during the time when hockey was taken from him. And just mm-hmm. kind of spiraling downward in regards to just, you know, dealing with that depression that he went through. And, you know, he wasn't shy to share those moments of his life. So, you know, it was just really fun to collaborate with him. And I think, you know, he was just, you know, a big supporter of mine and one of the last. So, like, he did get to see the film in its entirety. I believe he got to see one of the last fine cuts that we did. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what my area is in once we have filmed all the footage. And I'm not only the director, but I'm also the offline editor where, you know, I spend a lot of time crafting the scenes and the plot points, and I kind of put them in the order that I want to have the story told. And I do a mm-hmm. lot of the music, and mm-hmm. I do everything to the point where, you know, it's at a point where it looks really nice. And then I pass it on to what we call an online editor that really has the expertise in color correction and adding all the bells and whistles that really make a movie stand out. Like, you know, the motion graphics and those types of things. So Henry got to see it all the way up to the point before it got into online edit. So it was definitely, you know, something that was really close to a fine cut. And it was just awesome because, you know, he wasn't very, I was almost worried when it comes to, you know, when you're telling a story about someone's life, I get a little nervous when I have to show it to them. And sometimes most, I guess most people will have a lot to say, you know, or a lot of feedback. And I was just so, you know, relieved when he seen it. One of the last cuts, he was like, you know what? I really like this. He's all, what's next? All
right. Hey, we're with Leah Hale, and we're talking about The Electric Indian, which will be premiering on Tuesday at 8 p.m. on the 26th here on TPT in the Twin Cities, and then available online. Hey, we're going to still have Leah on next segment. This is Native Roots Radio.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh. Hey, I want to reintroduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years, and she speaks her truth here on Native Roots Radio for the past 7 years and is a co-founder of Native Roots Radio. And I learn so much. And take it away, Wendy.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And it's always my pleasure to do that. I'm really excited because we just got a brand new Minnesota State Director for HSUS, and I'm happy to be going to be meeting with him and working with him upcoming months, so I'm really happy about that. Aaron, congratulations if you're listening. We appreciate you and the work that you do. So I have lots of facts. Fun facts, as usual. Today I'm going to keep it light because everybody's hunkered down in the snow in Minnesota. And it's always fun to just hear some fun facts and not something that's too harsh. But again, just go on to Howling for Wolves, click on events, and register for Wolf Day at the Minnesota State Capitol on Wednesday, April 17th. I will be there and I'm looking forward to it. So number 12, we're going through a list that's like 110 fun facts, and it's from a site called Fact Animal, and you could go on there and check out all these fun facts. And they're, every time we read these fun facts, I'm astonished because I really learn something new every day. But we left off at number 12. Number 12, little is known about the elusive giant squid. However, the largest squid ever found measured over 50 feet and weighed nearly a ton. That's amazing. So 50 feet, what could you say 50 feet is? Just like the height of a two-story house or something is 50 feet? That's how big a squid is. Isn't that crazy?
Bigger than that. And then take that, Oprah, for eating squid.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We watched Jimmy Kimmel last night and Oprah was on. And I love Oprah. Don't get me wrong. I love her. But she was talking about her longtime partner, Stedman, and how he eats octopus every single day.
Every day?
Every day with okra. Like this weird thing that he has for breakfast. But if you ever go on, I would recommend watching, is it called The Octopus Teacher or My? I think it's My Octopus Teacher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Documentary about this guy who goes in the water every day and meets this octopus and really learns so much about life by meeting this beautiful animal.
That's an Academy Award winning documentary too.
Yeah, My Octopus Teacher. I recommend it. Go watch it. Yeah, so anyway, enough about that. Okay, number 13. the pangolin. You know that pangolin animal? It kind of looks like, I would say like an anteater, but it has like scales on it, like almost armor.
Oh.
Yeah, and it can roll up into a ball. And their armor is so strong, and it protects them against getting eaten by lions. Mm. But the pangolin, I thought this was going to be a fun fact, and here's another Debbie Downer, but the pangolin is one of the world's most poached animals. Oh. They use it in certain cultures and their scales that they, I don't know, put it in tea and eat it and drink it and whatever, and it's supposed to be like an aphrodisiac, but they're beautiful. Jeez. Animals. Yeah. Koalas can sleep up to 22 hours a day.
Same.
Yeah, they need more sleep than most animals because their diet of eucalyptus leaves contain toxins, are very low in nutrition and high in fibrous matter, so they take a large amount of energy to digest.
So you guys both kind of eat that kind of food because you both like to sleep.
Yeah, high fiber, I guess.
I love my sleep.
Me too.
I should have looked this up, but I didn't.
Here we go.
No, I'm going to skip this one because there's questions about this one. All right, number 16, even after having its head cut off,
oh gosh,
a cockroach can live for weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. I should probably
here we go again.
Debbie Downer
12 facts
today. A group of parrots is known as a pandemonium.
I didn't know that.
That's a positive one.
Here's another gross one.
Uh-huh.
Cows poop up to 15 times a day, which can be as much as 115 pounds of manure per day, or approximately 21 tons per year.
So you're saying I'm part cow?
Oh, gosh.
The common garden snail has 14,000 teeth. Yeah, their microscopic teeth are called radula, and some species actually have over 20,000 teeth.
Wow.
Yeah, garden snail.
What do they need those teeth for?
The blue whale is the largest animal on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they use it for eating leaves.
Real crunchy leaves.
They're chopping leaves, and they eat plants, I think. I don't know. Another thing I have to look up. The blue whale is the largest animal on the planet. And its tongue, the blue whale's tongue, can weigh as much as a car or a small adult elephant. That's just their tongue.
Wow. Good thing they live in the ocean.
Good thing you read these.
I know. Some of them I did and some of them I didn't, The longest living verified animal is a Madagascar radiated tortoise, which died at the age of 188 years old in May of 1965. There's another tortoise that's still living here.
Yeah.
And I think he's over 100 years. I'll have to look him up.
Mm-hmm. That's who I thought you were talking about.
Maybe his name is Joseph or something. I can't remember. But I did talk about him one time.
Yeah, we call him Joey.
Yeah. The fastest animal on the planet. Can either of you guys guess?
Roadrunner.
Cheetah.
Roadrunner.
Cheetah. You are absolutely right.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome, Haley.
You heard
the fastest
before,
animal on the planet is a cheetah, and it can reach speeds up to 75 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those were fast. We'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that for the end of the sacred animal section. And I'll look up the tortoise for next time.
Hey, Big Peeny Giggy Wendy, thank you for everything and for those fun facts. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Free Leonard Peltier. Now. May we
hope.
I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenicoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests, which make this show. If you are listening to this show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.